tuned to 90.7 FM, WGXC. Hands-on, listener-supported radio from Greene and Columbia County.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is August Black. I am the Waveform Resident Artist in Residence this week, and I am here live today with Steve Bradley. You want to say hi, Steve?
Hi, everybody. How are you doing?
I think we're doing all right. So Steve and I are planning to occupy this space. It's I don't know how to describe it. It's a kind of virtual space that exists in this software application I made. What do you got on the deck for us today, Steve?
I have a variety of sounds from the recent Brutax emergence that happened in late spring, and recordings from all kinds of context. And this particular track you hear in the background is a performance that I did for another project, and it's an hour long. We're not going to play the whole hour, but we're going to be pulling excerpts from these various tracks. But I'm interacting with the broods. I actually have a handful of cicadas that I'm using as a kind of instrument, and they perform beautifully for me. So that's what you're hearing now.
Do they all have names?
They did at the time, but I've lost track of them because they're numerous.
What happens if one slips out and gets away?
Oh, quickly they're replaced. They were coming to me. I didn't have to go capture them. I think they're kind of attracted to whatever's moving in the landscape, and somehow they came right to me like I was their old friend. And actually, I experienced them in 2004. So these are the children of the brood that I experienced 17 years ago. So I feel very connected to them emotionally and psychologically.
Yeah, let's have a listen. Thank you. So what are we listening to now, Steve?
So I have these contact mics attached to a crepe myrtle tree during the emergence of a brood X, and you can hear the crepe myrtle tree in the wind, like wind chimes, and then you hear the brood X vibrating the tree branches. And, of course, they're entering into the microphones at that point. But I think I have a theory that these are the males singing, and they're communicating to the females who are still underground at the time that I made this recording. And so that's what we're hearing.
What are they saying?
It's time to arrive. Time to come up and dance.
I dig it.
Also, there are three subspecies that you're hearing at the moment. You can hear, I'm going to turn this down just a bit. You can hear three subspecies. And they are, looking here, the Magi cicada, Cassini, which is the tiniest one in between, the Septaducula, and then the largest one is the Septindicium. And so that's what you're hearing, basically a chorus of these three different songs that are being sung at the same time. Females don't really make the song a click when they're ready for mating.
And are they tuned in any particular way?
That's a good question. I'm not an entomologist, so I imagine they are performing at a certain frequency to attract one another. As I said, the females make a clicking sound, so if you snap your finger, they'll come to you. The males will be attracted to you. So all you have to do is snap, and they'll be right on your shoulder. But you know, these creatures are over 47,000 years old. There are fossils. I forget what period of time that is, but there are fossils that they have, and they were much larger. They were like probably 6 to 7 inches long. These are only 2, 2.5 inches, the biggest ones.
Yeah, I remember them at least twice growing up in Baltimore. They always...
Yeah, that would have been 2004, I think.
Uh-huh. They make quite a presence.
They sure do. They sure do.
I wish I'd known how to snap, or that I was supposed to snap my fingers then.
Yeah, you would have had a lot of friends. It's interesting, though, the public, how they respond to the insects. There's a lot of positive responses, but a lot of people are afraid of them, and yet they're like gentle creatures, very docile.
And when they Can you tell us a little bit about their stages? Like, I know at some point they shed their skin and leave like a kind of shell of their whole body attached to a leaf or some tree part. Is that right?
Yes, it's an exoskeleton, but that's the last molting that they do before they mate. I believe there's five or maybe four stages before that where they're underground for 17 years, and they're just beginning that journey right now as we're talking, as we're playing these sounds. Out in the backyard, their children that you hear right now, the children of these adults, have just dropped into the earth and are beginning their journey underground for the next 17 years. So during that 17 years, they change 4 to 5 times before they reemerge in 2038.
It's amazing.
It really is amazing.
And so is it the entire insect that buries under the ground, or do they just plant, like lay their eggs or pupa or whatever it is?
Well, about 4 weeks ago, the females, after they've become impregnated by the males, create a slice in new branches up in the top of the trees. You might be able to still see them today, where they call flagging, cicada flagging. So the trees have these brown, they look like flags, but branches that are broken. What the female does is slice with her abdomen or egg depository device. And it's real sharp. So she slices the branch, deposits her eggs, and then about 3 to 4 weeks later, these eggs reemerge as small nymphs, and they drop out of the trees back into the earth, and they're burrowing down into the earth right now. And then they usually go to the same tree unless they are blown by the wind or whatever. Are the trees torn down, then that population will disappear. So it's really important the whole ecosystem stay intact. Otherwise, we lose these creatures. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. And didn't you say you recorded the tree itself? And part of the theory is that they're sending sound through the tree down to the roots? Was that something?
Yes, that's a loose theory. Yes, that is correct. It's not proven, but it's my theory. So that's what you hear right now. I'm going to raise that a little bit. So you hear the humming or buzzing sound underneath the higher pitch sounds. Those are the males vibrating on the branch. I'll let that play for a few seconds here. You can also hear the, right there, the largest of the species has a sound like Pharaoh. That's the largest species. And then the regular drone are the middle ones. And then you hear one that clicks and it buzzes. That's the smallest one. Thank you.
Thank you.
What do you think about when you hear the cicadas, Steve?
That's a good question. I think a lot about how it alters the soundscape. It really dominates the soundscape, particularly the brood. Right now we are hearing the annual cicadas, and they're much more dispersed, and their sound levels are quite different. But what I was really impressed with when the Brood X emerged is how it masked all the noise in the neighborhood. I could barely hear children off in the distance playing, or traffic and airplanes. And it really dominates the soundscape. And it kind of mesmerizes me. It's very meditative, I think. And for me, coming out of the pandemic, the Brood X was perfect timing, coming out when we were also emerging from 17 months of quarantine. And here these critters have been waiting for this moment for 17 years, and the persistence, the biological persistence, is really remarkable. So the sound to me is metaphoric. And probably more importantly, how it really altered the soundscape when they emerged.
Yeah, it's funny that you say it's meditative and masks the, you know, the entire sound of the environment. Did you sleep better?
I would say so. It was actually no, because I was up almost 24/7 trying to record as many of their sounds as possible. So in a way, they were distractive. It was really hard because at the time I had to work. So I did my work faster just so I could get outside with these creatures. Fortunately, they emerged when the semester had ended. In the summer, it was just beginning. So and at night, they're actually quite interesting at night. They sound like electricity in the trees, because they would, I don't know, the trees, when a little bit of wind would blow through the trees, you'd hear this kind of sound. And actually, I performed outside with them, and it would wake them up, and they would actually perform as well, I think, because of the sound I was generating. This particular sound that you hear right now is ultrasonic sound that I was trying to listen to the cicadas using this bat detector. But in a lot of ways, when I was playing the bull roarer outside at night, the bats showed up and were flying around me, thinking I was some kind of creature that they could eat. And this, again, another theory. It's quite fascinating.
Let's have a listen.
So what do you remember of your childhood with the 2004 Brood X?
I just remember the brown leaves. I remember we had this cherry tree, and they really liked this cherry tree that we had. And you could just sit there and hear it, the sound kind of roll over you in waves. Hypnotic, nice. Is not the right word to describe it. It was more than that. But when I think about this, I think about like the natural and incessant need to communicate. I think about the radiation of their sounds through the tree, down to the roots, you know, through 17 years of space time. And I think about our needs as humans to like radiate our heat, radiate our energy, you know, talk to one another. That's where my mind goes. And so for me, I also think somehow, I know this isn't the right concept, but I also think of like biblical terms, right?
Interesting.
I think the locust and the cicadas are two different things, if I'm not mistaken. Is that right?
That is correct. Yeah, totally different creatures. But the bloom or their emergence is similar, that what they are doing is, because there's so many, the birds can eat them, humans can eat them, or swat them away or whatever, or embrace them like me. But there's so many that they biologically is part of their survival strategy. But also, I think interesting to think about them in terms of their biological clock and how they're like incredible timekeepers. And I'm amazed at how biologists, entomologists were basically calculating their emergence. And we've become much better at calculating sort of these biological instances. But hundreds of years ago, we probably were not that tuned into bioclocks and how cycles work and so forth. I think it's really important to point out another emergence going to occur in 2024, where it's the Brood 13 and Brood 17. It'll be around the Bloomington, Illinois area. And so I'm already looking for a cabin in that vicinity for 2024 to hear all six of there's six subspecies. So it will be an amazing chorus to experience in 2024.
Wild. And are they attracted to certain areas for certain reasons?
I think the trees are part of their attraction. I noticed in the woods, in that not far from where we stayed to record the cicadas, there were certain trees that cicadas didn't dig up around the hole, so there'd be these holes emerge, but you wouldn't see cicadas around those trees. But around like the crepe myrtles, oak trees, they were very abundant, but then other areas they were not. So I think it's a chemical soil. Probably they don't like sandy soil. They like more clay, dense sort of moist environment. They're like mycelium, and they're very connected to the roots of the trees. Huh. And so there's a lot to learn about that particular network and why they're in a particular area versus another. I think probably storms, like if we had a hurricane around the same period as they were dropping out of the trees, that would disrupt them, and they would probably move their brood to different parts of the area because of the storm. But fortunately, we didn't have any storms yet. But there's a lot of conditions. You know, all the toxins we put in the earth to abate weeds kill them. So we need to be mindful of what we put in the earth to protect these creatures. Also, there's two bacteria in their gut. This is fascinating. Two bacteria in their gut that helps them digest the sap on the trees. And they can't live without the bacteria, and the bacteria cannot live without them. So there's an interesting biological balance in the environment and their relationship to themselves, but also to the other organisms that help them survive.
Yeah.
So what you're hearing right now, I had these stainless steel bowls. This is in the state park where I performed with the cicadas. So I had about 20 cicadas out on a table in different bowls with microphones placed around the bowls. And so that's what you're hearing right now. And then I think I'm playing a bowl, a singing bowl, with them. And they were actually responding to me when I was playing. They would get louder, quieter. Birds were flying around my head. as I was performing. So bioacoustics are really quite a fascinating area to delve into, and, you know, just to understand better communication and territoriality, but also singing for pleasure. I do wonder, do insects sing for pleasure when they're feeling good, or when they're feeling bad, do they sing the blues? I don't know.
Well, here's a question. Do they stop singing, or is it a constant, are they constantly making noise?
Yeah, that's a great question. When I was at McKeldin Park, not far from, it's north of Baltimore City, we would hear these waves of the brood. This is in the height of the emergence. And all of a sudden, everything would stop. And very slowly, the sound will build back up into this heavy drone that you hear right now in the background. But there's a kind of pulse. But then suddenly, they would just stop singing. And I don't know if it's because of predators or a particular sound or a kind of need to regroup as an orchestra or as a group sound. But that's a great question. But yeah, there are moments of, I wouldn't say perfect silence, but there are moments they would lull and get very, very quiet and then build back up to this chorus that we are hearing right now. Also, we had put bird seed out early on, just before the cicadas emerged. And as soon as the cicadas came out, the bird seed wasted in the food containers. So birds were abundant. There were so many broods of birds 2 months ago. It was really remarkable. But now the birds are eating the bird seed again.
So I want to ask a question about the frequency. So it sounds like there's quite a lot going on in the cicada sound. Is there a fundamental pitch or something you can harmonize to?
Good question. You know, David Rothenberg, who plays around, he's a jazz performer, and he plays, in fact, he just had a series of performances with cicadas, and I bet you he would have some ideas about that, but I have not looked into that. But that would be a great, you know, to actually put a spectrogram or, you know, to graphically, you know, like how we do sonification, but actually graph the sounds and look at them and compare them to other broods would be a really great research project.
Yeah, we could tune your bowl to match.
I tried. I was actually adding water to the singing bowls to change the pitch. I had some good success attracting the cicadas. I would use what's called a bull roar. It's a very ancient instrument. I think it's the Aboriginal cultures use them in other, I think, South America, but it's basically I use a rubber band and a stick and a little like wing, and I roll it around my head, and the cicadas would fly around me. They would actually kind of be attracted to that sound. So I do wonder about cross species communication and the possibilities there. Great question. That's a great one. So what you hear now is me playing water bottles with the cicadas. The crackling sound are two empty water bottles that I'm slowly squeezing in my hands, kind of pulsing with the cicadas. And then I have a couple cicadas on the desk that you hear interacting with me. Thank you. Because I'm playing out in a park, a public park, you know, state park, it was fascinating the public when they would walk by and they see this grown man with all these instruments squeezing water bottles out in the park with these cicadas. It was pretty funny. They stayed away from me.
No one came up to ask you what you're doing?
No. Actually, a state park ranger came to me and wanted to know what I was doing, and he was pretty entertained by it.
All right, everybody, thank you for your attention. You were listening to August Black and Steve Bradley. Thanks, Steve, for joining us today and for participating live from Baltimore. And thanks to Wave Farm for this lovely opportunity to do these experiments on their airspace. There'll be more going on this week with my residency. Starting tomorrow evening, we'll have a little experimental group at 6 p.m. Based on a workshop around this software I'm building called Mezcal, where you can do this kind of live interactive radio.